If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we'll celebrate the success of the Rayner Foundation. Now, for those who don't know, the Rayner Foundation is a rider charity launched 27 years ago as the Dave Rayner Fund to honour the memory of one of Britain's most gifted riders. The foundation has since helped 84 British cyclists to become professionals by issuing £1 million in rider support via 521 grants. Its class of 2022 is exceptional. 4 and perhaps even 5 young British riders will graduate to the World Tour next season, thanks to the foundation's support. Now, despite the challenges faced by domestic racing and the limited places available on British Cycling's Olympic Academy, the foundation offers a route to the top for Britain's best young riders. The Rayner Foundation is very close to our hearts at the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, and especially close to the heart of my co-host Phil Jones, the Managing Director of Brother UK. Phil, you once rode a very long way to raise money and awareness for the Dave Rayner Fund, as it was called then.
Yes, we did. That was back in 2018, where James Golding and I did the Tour of Britain One Day Ahead, with a view really to trying to raise a really big sum of money for the Rayner Foundation, which we ended up doing. I think we ended up passing over £20,000 to the foundation at the dinner that year. So yeah, it's a very, very important component. If we look at the sort of the entire framework of cycling in the UK, outside of the governing body, the Rayner Foundation is one of the most important pillars, in my opinion, for anybody with aspirations to become a professional cyclist who doesn't go through the Olympic program. So if you're not doing that, then this is one way where you can actually achieve your life ambition.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting, Phil, the way that the foundation has become an important piece in a larger jigsaw, so to speak. You know, that first generation of Academy superstars, Mark Cavendish, Geraint Thomas, that crowd, they went in at one end and came out the other, if you know what I mean. They finished the British Cycling Olympic Academy programme and began pro contracts. This latest generation, which I think people are accurately calling a golden generation, you know, Jake Stewart, Sam Watson, riders of that calibre, they're starting off on the Academy and then completing that early phase of their careers with other organisations, typically development teams attached to World Tour squads, and they're using Rayner funding to embark on that pathway. It's interesting how quickly that's changed.
Yes, it has. And I think probably, as in the world, in the way that even the business world works, what this is a classic disruption, isn't it? So if we think of the last 5 years of all these riders that just exploded into the World Tour, the Tadej Pogačars of the world and riders like that, they have bypassed what was the traditional system of how you might achieve success. There was this stepped system that you've got to do this and then go that and be a stagiaire, then you've got to do this. And ultimately, one day, you might get into a team, and kind of that all has all been totally disrupted. And effectively, if you've got the raw talent, you're almost being fast-tracked. So the issue for me now is, if you are one of those riders with this real talent for riding a bike, how do you quickly get in the shop window of the talent spotters who might be the people that go, well, actually, that individual there is definitely a tip for the future, and what we want to fast track them through our processes. Now, clearly, for that to happen, you need to be riding on the continent. And Belgium specifically is, of course, is one of the hotspots, really, where a lot of these talent spotters are hanging out. So if you can make your name and your reputation in winning some of the important and high profile races in Belgium and in France and other places, then you are definitely putting yourself in a shop window to be potentially talent spotted and fast track into European Conti teams, pro-continental teams, or a World Tour team.
Absolutely. I mean, recently Cycling Weekly's Tom Thewlis broke the news that British Cycling is making a significant reduction to the race days of its Academy Road programme and will attempt to form closer relationships with external development teams as part of its, quotes, evolution. It's fair to say that the Rayner Foundation has been ahead of that curve by funding ex-Academy riders to pursue opportunities overseas. Man, of course, who's been closer than anyone to this mix-and-match approach is Keith Lambert, a founding trustee of the Rayner Foundation and the coach of Team GB's under-23 squad. Last year, Keith received Cycling Weekly's Lifetime Achievement Award, and what a nice touch, Phil, at the Rayner Foundation dinner in Leeds when they presented that award for a second time, just to underline his achievement. I was chatting away to Dean Downing, and he told me basically what Keith doesn't know about cycling isn't worth knowing, and I was lucky enough to get a word with Keith as the dinner came to a close. He told me that a donation to the Rayner Foundation was an investment in the future.
It's investing in young people, isn't it? Giving young people opportunities. Not everybody can get on the British Cycling Academy, you know, and I work there, you know. They can only support so many people. It's fantastic that we're in a position now that we can help other young aspiring riders to achieve the dreams. I know we've got a big following and a big interest, and it is difficult at the moment, difficult time, but anybody can contribute anything to this fund. Everything goes towards helping them. We're all volunteers. As you heard David Miller, in those years, 96, there were hard times then as well, of course, you know. And he's often said, if it hadn't been for getting that opportunity with the Rayner Fund, he'd have had to balance, think, well, can I afford to go? Should I go? And may not have gone. We may not have had a rider doing what he did. And that's gone on over the years ever since, you know, over 27 years. It will have made a difference to some whether they went or didn't go. Not everybody's made a massive success. That never happens in life anyway, does it? But the more they give opportunity to, the more success you're likely to have. And the more we can do to give them that opportunity then. Long may it continue.
So wonderful to hear there from Keith Lambert speaking at the Rayner Foundation's annual dinner and charity auction at the Royal Armouries in Leeds a couple of weeks ago now. There were several World Tour riders at the dinner, including Fred Wright from Bahrain Victorious, our guest in episode 27. But the evening wasn't even about established stars, was it, Phil? It was all about the future. And my goodness, when you consider the Rayner Foundation's class of 2022, the future looks bright, doesn't it?
It does indeed. And I think we saw slightly lower numbers at the dinner this year from previous dinners that I've been to. And when you sort of examine why has that happened, well, there's a few reasons for that, of course. A number of other events surrounding this dinner. Of course, there was the Roulair event down in London. There's the Action Medical fundraiser, which I think was this week. So there's quite a lot in a very compressed timescale. And we're in a time when, of course, money and disposable income is shorter supply everywhere we go. And of course, we've still got that long tail of COVID where people aren't coming out in the same numbers that they used to. So, of course, almost every dinner is going to have slightly lower numbers than they did previously. But there were still over 300 people in that room at the Leeds Armouries. It was a very, very impressive event by any measure and any scale. So it was great to be there for sure. But when you look around the room, these sort of future stars, if you want to start talent spotting, you are going to say you were in the room with these stars of the future. So it's almost like being in the room and going, there's a lad over there called Tom Pidcock who's going to be the next big thing. And he is. You basically were in the company of those individuals who I think are tomorrow's superstars of UK-bred professional cyclists.
100%. I mean, let's just name some of those future stars. We've been lucky enough to have one of them on the podcast already. That was Oscar Onley, who's only recently turned 20. He announced from the stage that although he's been on Team DSM's development squad this year and guested, you know, with incredible effect for their World Tour team, you probably remember him going wheel to wheel with Tour de France winner Jonas Vingegaard at the Crow race, having lit up the Brother UK sponsored Tour of Britain a week earlier. Well, yeah, he dropped a heavy hint that he's going to be on DSM's World Tour squad next year. Leo Hayter, of course, who won the Baby Giro this year, he'll go to Ineos Grenadiers and join his brother Ethan, the British time trial champion. Sean Flynn will join Team DSM. Harrison Wood, who I'm very pleased to say will be a guest on a future edition of the Brother UK Cycling podcast, he will ride for Cofidis. The standout figure, though, among even such an exceptional cohort was Sam Watson, who will graduate next year to Groupama FDJ's World Tour squad from its development team after an outstanding season in 22 that saw him win the under-23 Gent-Wevelgem in Team GB colours. Sam was presented with the Rainer Foundation's Rider of the Year Award by Keith Lambert, and it was quite a touching moment, wasn't it? I mean, you could see Sam's respect for Keith and Keith's pride in Sam's achievement. Let's hear now from Sam, who told us about the bond he's formed with Keith.
Yeah, we really bonded over those races in France. You know, he's almost felt like a fatherly figure when we were out there. Like, he really cared and really cares for everybody he works with and really looked after me. So, and yeah, it's pretty special because that was my first under-23 win out there. And yeah, he was there. It feels amazing, you know. It's great to be voted that rider. I don't know who voted, but yeah, I'm very, very pleased. Definitely nice to, you know, after a little break, after the season, to finish with getting rewarded this reward. It's a nice little summary of the season, I guess.
Well, wonderful to hear there from Sam, who is a dazzling talent, but one of the most down-to-earth riders you could hope to meet. And I'm delighted to say that Sam will be our guest on the next episode of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast. I mean, we're talking about an incredible strike rate here for the Rainer Foundation, aren't we, Phil? I mean, from a cohort this year of around 30 funded riders, five are likely to be in the World Tour next season. That's pretty incredible.
And that will probably account for the fact, Tim, that all the jerseys that these people were signing were going very, very quickly in the charity auction that night, because I think everyone's going to spot a bargain there and somebody in the future is going to say, I bought a jersey for 50 quid that's going to be worth 500 or 1,000 when framed a few years down the road. So very smart buying going on the night, which was great. But you're right. I mean, if you look at the strike rate there amongst those riders, and if you look at sort of the foundation and who's been funded over the years, they do have a very impressive strike rate, that they tend to be able to spot the right riders, give them the environment and the opportunity to sort of go away, try it, and see whether they can cope with the demands that it takes to actually try and become one of these World Tour riders. It's not easy. It really does take full 100% commitment, where you're going to probably have to leave behind your family, your friends, all the people you love, your normal environment where you might train or live, and go and live somewhere, often in an unfamiliar place, often maybe in a language that you don't speak, with people that you don't know, and have to go through an incredible training regime and racing regime. You've got to really want it. So I think the trick of the way that the Rainer Foundation works is that they are pretty good at spotting those individuals that may have the credentials or the attributes to become one of those people who then can have some funding to go away and then put themselves into that arena to see whether they can sink or swim.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the history of Rainer-funded riders, it really is a who's who, not only in British cycle sport, but, you know, in international cycle sport too. David Miller, Charlie Vergelius, Dan Martin, Hannah Barnes, Ian Stannard, Adam Yates. I mean, the list is endless. You're absolutely right, Phil. You know, you've put your finger on it. What distinguishes a Rainer rider from an athlete who, for example, goes through the academy program is this element of self-sufficiency, that they go out on their own overseas in Belgium, France, Italy, Spain, you name it. And as you say, there's an element of sink or swim. Now, somebody who was able to offer a real insight into the resilience required by such a demanding profession was Dean Downing. Now, ironically, Dean was never a Rainer-funded rider. He came to the sport when he was a little bit older. He went to university, then he worked for a couple of years before committing full-time to cycling. But Dean did undertake the journey of racing overseas alone. He took himself to Belgium and tested himself and said, OK, I'm going to make it over here as a rider, or I'm not. Well, let's have a listen now to Dean, who's become a highly successful coach. I mentioned Fred Wright's observation from episode 27 that the Rainer Foundation does more than create professional riders. In Fred's words, it makes better people. And that really struck a chord with Dean.
I was never a funded rider, a little bit older when I went full-time, but I've always been supportive. I raced on the track with Dave Rainer, 94, at the Manchester track when it opened. I've always had a real nice relationship with the Dave Rainer Fund Foundation now. I've been a lot of times as a rider. I've been with my wife, I've been with some guests that I've brought over the years. So I always try and support it. And I've been fortunate enough, I've had five riders here tonight, and then Mason Holloman was here. He's been a funded rider before, I'm pretty sure he will have been. So yeah, I come and see the guys, and that's my little part really, as a coach, passing my skills and coaching skills on to riders that have been on the fund before and are still on the fund now. So that's exciting for me as a coach as well, but just nice to be here with Phil enjoying the night. There'll be a lot of riders that have been through the reign of fund and maybe they've done really well in Belgium or France or wherever for a couple of years but didn't make it as a professional cyclist, so they may come back to the UK and still race and still do well at that, or they may stop cycling but just building better people, they become better people because they learn so much about themselves. And again, it's not about the results sometimes, it's about living in Belgium on your own when the tough times hit, that you get through that, because that's not physical, that's mental. How do you mentally get through the tough times in Belgium when it's not going your way? If that builds better people, like Fred says, that's a great saying from Fred, and it really does, because they can then take those learnings onto their next career, if it's something else out of cycling, their career in cycling as a coach, or whatever the case might be. Building better people is It's a great one, that.
Well, great to hear there from Dean, Phil, about the psychological demands, if that's the right phrase, placed on a young rider trying to make it abroad. Dean, as we've said, wasn't a Rainer-funded rider, but his brother, Russell, was. Tell us all about that, Phil.
Yeah, it's very interesting because, of course, you've got the Downing dynasty, haven't we, of Dean and his brother, Russ. And Russ was also very, very capable cyclist, so the two brothers were. So the genes were fantastic in the Downing family. But it was at a time when Russ was riding for Linda McCartney. We're going right back in the day there. And I think when the Linda McCartney team collapsed, effectively, Russ was able to secure some funding through the Rainer Foundation. And that was introduced through a chap called Chris Walker, who used to ride for Rally Banana with Tim Harris and Dave Rainer. So it was Russ's relationship with Chris that introduced him to the Rainer Foundation. And you'll see a link back, actually, that many of the people that sit behind the foundation now were in and around and knew Dave at the time when he rode for Rally Banana, which Tim did too. Ironically, when I was chatting with Tim, I mean, he was British road race champion himself, and he's worked for World Tour teams, you know, and there's now at EF Education's women's team. And what he doesn't know about cycling in the last 30 years, frankly, isn't worth knowing. He knows everybody, he knows everything. And I spent a bit of time with Tim on the night, and this link back to these days of where the Rally Banana team were together has sort of formed a bond of friendship. And as a result of that, Dave Rayner's tragic death, it was that bunch of people that really glued together, including Keith Lambert, to say, well, what can we do to create this legacy in Dave's name? And this is where sort of my fascination with Rally Banana came from, because it was that story of that team at a time. They were a really fantastic bunch of riders. And that Rally Banana team was iconic in its bikes and the look and all these sorts of things. And it was a sort of a golden time. And I would generally recommend, if anybody's interested in the Dave Rainer story, to read a book actually about his legacy. And it's called Everybody's Friend is the name of the book. And it was written by a chap called Peter Cossins. And that actually tells the story of Dave's start and how he ended up being a very capable rider. And then, of course, to ultimately the tragedy of how he lost his life. And I'd really recommend it if you're just into cycling, you just want to understand one bit of the history, because it's as an important part of our domestic cycling history, because Dave was in the Milk Race with Tim and Chris and all of these things, as it was kind of then how that cohort of people went on into cycling and to achieve greater things in cycling from that moment, really. So it's really wonderful. Please make sure you buy that and read that.
Yeah, it's a great book. And Peter Cossins is a great writer, you know, former editor of the much-missed Pro Cycling magazine. And Tim Harris, well, where do you want to start? You know, you don't meet too many guys like Tim in a lifetime, do you? A fantastic character. What a pleasure to spend an evening with Tim and with Joss Ryan, Tim's partner, who of course does so much for the Rainer Foundation. Phil, I thought I had the evening trumped when I got on a train to Leeds early that morning in Dorset. Later, I'm waiting in the reception of the Holiday Inn around the corner from the Royal Armouries, and in walks a chap in an EF Education jacket, and of course, it was Tim Harris. So I walked over, stuck my hand out and said, Tim, you know, great to see you again. I've come all the way from Dorset. He looked at me and said, really? I've just flown in from Colombia. And that sort of set the tone for the evening, really.
He had flown in from Colombia because he's out there at the moment experimenting with the women on the F team in high altitude to just see now what a difference that's going to make. And obviously, he knows Colombia ever so well. He speaks about six languages fluently. He's so experienced, so worldly wise. He's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. Time with him is really, really easy. And I said, Tim, have you really flown all the way back from Colombia for tonight? He said, yeah. He said, I'm probably going to need to go back there sometime next week to resume everything. But that's the importance of this night to me, is I've got to be here to supporting it. And I'm like, wow, that's absolutely incredible.
Well, that sounds typical of Tim, an absolutely exceptional character. A great rider back in the day, British road race champion, no less, and now an influential person inside professional cycling. His day job, of course, is DS for EF Education, TIBCO SVB, the UCI Women's World Tour team. Well, let's hear now from Tim, because as you rightly say, Phil, he was a very close friend of Dave Rayner.
I was a teammate with Dave for 2 years at Rally Banana. I was also, apart from that, a very good friend of his. Went on a holiday with him and everything. The Rayner Foundation is dear to my heart. I haven't got an official role in anything, but I help looking at riders, going to a lot of races in Belgium. If I'm not on my own job, I liaise with Martin Jos, I'm with Keith really a lot. I think Dave will be looking down somewhere and just be so honoured that we've made something, the committee's made something that is enduring. We just try and get some funds in that we can just keep supporting riders to do this, because I think it's worthy. Dave went to Italy when he was 17, it would be what he wanted. But these young riders, I mean, it's really, really hard. The majority won't ever going to be pro bike riders, but I don't think any one of them 20 years down the road will forget the days that they went to Belgium, Holland, Italy, France, Spain and had the greatest time in their lives, and they'll always remember it. So from my point of view, also knowing Dave so well, I think it's a fitting honour to him, because obviously now he's so far away, not so many people really know him personally. So for me, that's really important that we keep his name, give him the honour that he deserved, because he was a really fantastic guy.
Well, who better to ask about Dave Rayner's legacy than Tim Harris, his close friend and a teammate at Rally Banana. Now, it's interesting, Phil, that you mentioned Peter Cosin's book, Everybody's Friend, which, you know, I think is such a central reading for people who may have come to cycling after Dave's generation. We've grown accustomed as fans in this country, I think, over the last 15 years or so to watching young British riders graduate smoothly to the professional ranks. But, you know, before the lottery-funded revolution at British cycling, that simply didn't happen. It's hard to put into context, you know, just how good Dave Rayner was. He was exceptional in the, you know, in the real sense of the word, in that he raced in Europe as a fully fledged professional with what today would be called a World Tour team, in an era when that simply didn't happen to British riders. Changing tack, it was very interesting that Tim spent so much of our time together talking about women's cycling, and I know that funding more female riders is a real target for the foundation. They've had some excellent female riders in the past, notably Hannah Barnes. But, you know, there is still a huge discrepancy between the number of male and female riders on the foundation. And Tim and Joss are determined to address that situation.
Yeah, for sure. Of course, on the night as well, we had the brilliant Hannah Walker, who sort of really reinvented herself now as a rather brilliant commentator on racing of all types. And Hannah was funded too. So Hannah Barnes and Hannah Walker, of course. You couldn't help but notice on the night that the cohort was mostly young males. When I was chatting to both Joss and to Tim, it's a problem that they know about, that there aren't enough young females still coming through the UK domestic channel to push through into the World Tour. And that's a sort of a known fact. So I know the Rayner Foundation are doing a lot more now to try and see what additional things that they can do, such as helping to fund some of the UK elite development teams to race abroad if they have riders who are under 21 females, for example, you know, to help give them that experience. They will consider applications like that now within the foundation to just help with that process. So they understand the issue very, very well. And I know all of the board members and trustees there are working hard to try and address that issue. And when I asked that to Tim, because of course Tim is now sitting as a DS in the EF TIBCO, so he's got a very unique view on it. He's saying, yeah, absolutely. When we're looking for talent now, we're looking in places like Colombia. Cycling is such a big thing there. There is high altitude, so everyone's already high altitude trained to some degree. They've got amazing VO2 as a result, which is incredible. So I think for females, particularly in the UK scene, something like the Rainer Foundation is going to be very, very important with a view to getting them, you know, to the World Tour.
Well, you mentioned Hannah Walker there, Phil, and Hannah was another guest I managed to grab a word with after the presentations. Hannah, as you rightly say, was a Rainer rider back in the day, but she'll be better known to our listeners, I think, as a commentator on Eurosport and GCN. Now, Hannah told me that the trustees had approached her early about hosting this year's dinner in Leeds, and she'd been delighted to accept.
When I was asked during the Tour de France a few months ago, it was a no-brainer. I was immediately wanting to host the evening and be a part of it and also give back to the foundation. 10 years ago, I was a funded rider myself on a three-month basis when I was out racing in Belgium. So, you know, I've seen over the years the work that the fund has done and the help that it's given to many, many riders. A lot of those have gone on to professional careers. Others have come away with an experience like no other, having raced and lived abroad, whether that be in Belgium, France, Spain, Italy, wherever it might have been that they've based themselves. And I think it's such a unique thing that the fund is doing in any sport, really, and the opportunities that they're giving to very, very talented riders who might not have the opportunity to prove themselves elsewhere, whether that be within the Great Britain setup or otherwise. And so I just think it's given riders another pathway to make it to the top. And I think it's incredible to support. I've been to the dinners just because I want to come to the dinners for many years. And yeah, to host tonight was a real pleasure, a true honour.
So good to hear there from Hannah, whose career offers another window on the work of the Rainer Foundation. Now, Hannah, by her own admission, didn't quite have what it takes to become a professional cyclist. She doesn't regret a second spent as a funded rider, and she's used her inside knowledge of the sport to build a successful career as a commentator. Now, Hannah might stand as Exhibit A for the Foundation's broader remit to support, inspire, and develop. Their website describes a funded racing programme as an internship, which I thought was interesting. You know, one that they say provides a raft of opportunities to help riders progress further in life. Now that's very interesting, isn't it, Phil? You know, despite this incredible track record of turning young British cyclists into World Tour professionals, they're not expecting every funded rider to become a pro cyclist. What they aim to do is to provide life-changing experiences for young people that will build resilience, that will build self-confidence, that will build language skills, networking skills, organisational skills, all of the skills, I guess, Phil, that you look for as an employer at Brother UK.
Yeah, do you know, I was just thinking that as you were saying it, when we have people come to us for interviews, we're not just looking at, okay, what is your skill in this area? I'm looking at kind of broader, how have they got here? Did you travel abroad? Did you have a gap year in uni? What sports and clubs and what interests you have outside of work? But it gives indicators, actually, of sort of the wider life experiences, which can then indicate levels of individual resiliency that that person might have. So the more life experience we expose ourselves to, the more worldly wise we become, and therefore, you know, even in business environments, we've seen these things before. We've suffered setbacks, for example, and know how to overcome them. So if somebody in their life, even if they didn't become a professional and they decided to go away and do it and go, yeah, I did 3 years abroad trying to make it, then for me, I'd go, good on you. That looks like a great characteristic as an individual. Tell me more, because I'm looking for somebody that might have that grit or determination to want to make it. But equally, if they didn't, that resiliency to bounce back and go, well, okay, I'm going to come back, regroup and do something else. So in that kind of context, then I don't think you can fail, really. The experiences that the foundation is going to give you is going to make you a better human and hopefully give you more human factors, which will allow you to hopefully live a better life.
Absolutely. We spoke to two great examples at the Foundation dinner. Hannah Walker, we've already heard from, but also prominent was Calvert Churchill, another former Rainer rider who, frankly, could make it as a compere, as an auctioneer. I mean, he's a chap not lacking in confidence, but turned out to be a really insightful guy when we got to speak to him afterwards. He now works for a cycle shoe company. He's used his talents as a networker to stay within the sport, but in a different role to professional rider. And again, that's testament, isn't it, to the broad terms of success that are generated by the Rayner Foundation.
Yes, the auctioneer. So it was a nice chance to give a little back, practice me auction skills, learn from Kingsland Car Auction and Fakenham Auction in Norfolk. So a bit of the chit-chat, but it seems to have worked, raised a lot of money today. People are very generous as well, so it's good because it helped me immensely, the fund. I might have not made it as a pro rider, but it certainly helped me in my latter career. You know, I'm now working for a cycle and shoe company, and I think really without the Rayner Fund, I wouldn't have been in that position at all. So it's not only about supporting riders who are going on to racing, but it's about supporting riders in their developmental years, much in the same way that you might go to university and receive a bursary or a grant. This is really just as effective in the same way as providing those riders the opportunity to go and do it. So yeah, it's a pleasure and a privilege to be at the Rayner Fund again and to give back in that way. A bit of banter and a bit of chit chat. Never stop. Still in contact with a lot of the ex lads who are Rayner funded. Still in contact with the lads who've gone pro or amateur or have just stopped riding the bike completely. It's very much a fraternity. So those who have been Rayner funded, it lasts a lifetime, it goes on a while, and it's good, it's nice, it's, you know, a bit of a brotherhood, you know, it's something to be proud of as well. You know, I'm not shy of saying, like, I was a Rayner funded rider, this is who I was on the Rayner fund with. You're talking about Giro d'Italia winners, Olympians, etc, etc, and I'm glad that I can call them friends. Glad to be, very proud to be a Rayner funded rider.
Well, some great insights there from Calvert, who, as well as being a former Rayner funded rider and now a cycle industry insider, could easily begin a third career as an auctioneer. The lessons learned in King's Lynn Car Auction paid off handsomely, didn't they, at the Rayner Foundation dinner. Just before we leave Tim Harris and we leave women's cycling, Phil, as you mentioned, it's acknowledged by the Rayner Foundation that young female riders from Britain are facing increasing competition from their counterparts in mainland Europe and even South America for places in the UCI Women's World Tour. You'll be able to give us a steer here, Phil, but I think I learned from a conversation between Tim Harris and Ian Watson, the manager of Team Brother UK LDN, who joined us at the dinner, that the foundation is now considering other mechanisms to encourage British female riders under the age of 21.
Yes, indeed. And of course, we had two guests that night. Dean Downing came as our guest, and Dean is coaching some of these younger female riders too, which is great. So he's got a very unique view. And of course, Ian is running a series of teams now where somebody can turn up at Regent's Park, having only just got a bike, and see a series of steps that they could take from starting to going on to his team, Watto, and then going on to Team LDN and the Elite Development Team as a stepping stone pathway. So I think Ian is one of those individuals that sees the problem, and all credit to him is trying to do something about it. And we plugged Ian and Tim together at the end of the night. We ended up back at the hotel and it was absolutely brilliant. We got back, as usual, the bar had closed early and it was like, oh, you've got to be joking. And I think it was Mark actually that turned up with a bottle of Dead Man's Fingers rum that he'd won in the raffle. So we quickly arranged some espresso cups and we were, you know, just sat round the table chewing the cud on this issue over a bottle of Dead Man's Fingers being drunk out of espresso cups. You couldn't write it, but I think it was very useful for Ian to talk to Tim. So Ian can sort of give a perspective of, look, this is what I'm trying to do to tackle this problem. And now how can people like World Tour teams create relationships with people like me and Dean and others that can put their hand up to say there's something really special right here, right now, and you need to put eyes on. And so I think this is really about creating those stronger ties now between some of the World Tour teams and actually the UK Elite Development teams, as well as the coach riders with people like Dean, as well as the Rayner Foundation that are seeing riders coming through. So this, I think, is just about being better organised, in my opinion. Getting better organised.
I got the sense, Phil, you know, just from being sat there while the espresso cups with Dead Man's Fingers were being passed around, that, you know, this was going to be a significant conversation, that Ian was having a really good chat with Tim and Joss. And I think it's fantastic, you know, that in this very professional sport, which it is now, it's still human connections that make it run. You know, Tim and Joss were obviously very impressed by Ian's achievements with Team Brother UK LDN and with his feeder team. So let's just watch that space, because that might become very interesting indeed.
May I just quickly say again, massive thanks to Mark Etches for pulling up at exactly the right time with that bottle of Dead Man's Fingers to allow that conversation to properly take place, because it would have been easy to go to bed. But driven on by this wonderful act of generosity, we carried on the conversation and the whole sport benefited. So big thanks to Mark Etches, who everybody will know. He's the man behind Montsaur and he's a very accomplished commissaire and a race organiser. So Mark, big thanks from all of us on the Brother Cycling Podcast for that donation.
Indeed. Well, actually, Phil, you've given me a really nice link there into another point that I wanted to get your thoughts on. You know, a guy like Mark Etches, who is, as you say, an accomplished commissaire, race organiser, former rider, of course, he's exactly the kind of guy that you would expect to meet at the Rainer Foundation dinner. And it's interesting, isn't it, just how unique that event is. You said at the top of the episode that there are lots of events at this time of the year. There's Rouleur Live, of course, in London, Action Medical Research, you know, they do amazing work in their field, but you know, that's another London event. The Rainer Foundation dinner really is an entity all of its own, isn't it? I mean, it's a very authentic event, for want of a better word, very genuine, with some very genuine people there. I mean, our table, Phil, I seem to remember, included Tom Pidcock's grandparents.
No, it was brilliant. I was sat next to Tom Pidcock's Nana and it was great. She was so funny. They were great company. I think that's the thing, the uniqueness about that dinner is not only just the people that you're able to meet, people we've described already who are very significant in the domestic sport as well as the international sport, but actually also as a result of the people that were former Rainer funded, some of the prizes that come into the auctions and the raffles are really, really unique. So one example of that was they auctioned off. I was in the bidding for this, by the way, and I lost it, which I was a bit gutted about, but we've all got our feelings, haven't we? But it was a trip to go out to the Ineos training camp in Mallorca to spend a day with the team, to go on a ride out with the team, dinner with the team, the whole VIP experience on the inside of the Ineos bubble in January. You know, that is a very, very unique prize. And it's only people, because of their connections to the Rainer Foundation, that are bringing prizes like this to the table.
Yeah, I mean, you've united the two key elements of the Rainer dinner there, Phil, the people and the auction. You know, the reason why the auction lots are so special is because the people in the room are at the very heart of the sport. And that was kind of embodied by a prize donated by Luke Rowe, a complete set of race numbers from Ineos Grenadiers, collected by Luke just before the final stage of this year's Tour de France. Keith Lambert, of course, had the inside story.
When you saw that Luke Rowe had organised those numbers for an unbelievable gesture from him, wasn't it, to do that? And he actually rang me on the morning of the last stage of the tour this year. And he phoned, I thought, Luke should be sat in the last stage of the tour. And he just said he was on the bus, he'd got the numbers from all those eight riders and he was getting them to sign them to put into the fund, which was a fantastic gesture, wasn't it? Now, it was never on the fund as such, like we have riders representing us all year, but for a couple of years, we actually got a junior team together and took them to do the Junior Tour of Ireland, riding for the Dave Rainer Fund. They allowed it to happen, you know, got dispensation. And he got dispensation because he was actually still a youth. He didn't turn 16 until later in the year, but he got dispensation to ride it, and he won it. So that was great from him then, you know. And he's been here once or twice as well, of course, as a guest. But he's always kept that interest, as many of them have, you know, through the years. For them to come up with something like that off their own bat without having to be prompted is really, it really makes you feel, well, fantastic, we've done something right, you know.
Well, what a wonderful story there from Keith. Luke Rowe, of course, not the only rider in the UCI World Tour eager to show his gratitude to Keith and to the Rainer Foundation. Fred Wright and Jake Stewart attended the dinner, you know, pretty much with the idea of presenting Keith's Lifetime Achievement Award from Cycling Weekly. But don't think you have to be a World Tour rider to get some quality time with Keith Lambert. Phil, I saw you engaged in conversation with Keith towards the end of the evening. What were you guys talking about?
Yeah, Keith is an absolutely fantastic individual and a leviathan of the sport, honestly speaking. And on the night, there was these two auction items, centre stage. I put a picture of them on Twitter. One was this Ellis Briggs built bike and one was this beautiful Colnago, which we were all just drooling over. It was lovely. But the Ellis Briggs bike was up for auction. And the story behind it was a bike that Dave Rainer was actually building for a friend of his. And of course, he never got to finish that project. But But Bob Howden, who is currently the president of British Cycling, decided to finish that project, and he had the bike resprayed, rebuilt. And I think when we both came in on the night, Tim, both our eyes went towards him and thought, well, that looks rather nice. And surprise, surprise, great coincidence, happened to be my size. So I thought, do you know what? I quite fancy that because of the story behind Ellis Briggs as a bike manufacturer. Brian Robinson rode Ellis Briggs. The Rayner family, you know, there's a link into Ellis Briggs because it was, if I remember, Dave's dad, John, his uncle was Jack Briggs, and he was one of the founders of Ellis Briggs. So Dave's dad worked in Ellis Briggs bike shop. There was all this sort of history behind this bike, effectively. So anyway, long story short, I managed to win it in the auction, and I wheeled it over. And what was really wonderful and touching on the night is Keith Lambert came over and just wanted to thank me for the bid, which I thought was wonderful. But he then started reeling off all this information about this bike, and I was like, wow, thank you so much. And then he went away and got all these other bits. There was an amazing picture that was auctioned on the night that he donated. And I generally thought, you know, what a fantastic ambassador for the sport, rightly recognised for all that he's achieved and continues to achieve. But another, I think, great reason for anybody who's a cycling fan to go to that dinner.
Fitting tribute there, Phil, to Keith, twice a British road race champion, the manager for a decade or more of Great Britain's under 23 team, and a man, of course, who knew Dave Rayner well. We said earlier that the Rayner Foundation dinner was the most, quotes, authentic of these end-of-season events, and Keith Lambert really embodies that. There were lots and lots of people in that room who'd given their lives to British cycle sport, people who, you know, quite frankly, you wouldn't meet at any of these other end-of-season events.
I'm pleased to confirm that Tom Pidcock's Nan and Grandad did not bid on the jersey that Tom donated on the night. She confirmed to me that she can get one of those whenever she wants. And, you know, they go all over Europe following Tom, which was absolutely brilliant. And I thought that was fantastic. So, you know, if you ever fancy going, I'd really recommend it. And what I like about that dinner is they keep the ticket prices really reasonable. It's about 60 quid a head. Now, normally for a dinner like that, you'd be paying three times that. You would. And for 60 quid, you get a nice three-course dinner, a couple of bottles of booze on the table, and you get to be in the room with all of these people. But if you like to buy good auction prizes, and I always keep my eye out on a good auction prize, I bought a couple of Ethan Hayter signed tops, which I'm going to bring back here frame, and I'll probably chuck them into another auction. I didn't pay a huge amount for them, and I know they'll make even more money. What I'll do is I'll make the money from that next sale and donate that back to the charity, if you see what I mean. So you can kind of build up these things.
So a bit of a tip for anyone thinking of holding an auction to raise money for a cycling charity, make sure you invite an entrepreneur along and they will help you with the work of raising funds. I mean, what a brilliant idea. Win an item in one auction, frame it, polish it up, put it in another, and then donate the higher price back to the Rayner Foundation. Chapeau, Phil. On a more serious note, it's been a tough couple of years for the Rayner Foundation. With COVID, of course, they haven't been able to host the dinner, and the dinner is a real fundraiser. Yet they've still managed to send significant numbers of riders overseas. It's an organisation, and particularly in the economic climate that we live in at the moment, that is facing a really challenging future despite all of its success. Speaking after the dinner, Keith Lambert gave us a pretty frank assessment of the foundation's financial position.
I think there's been a good response tonight, but having said that, you know, the ticket sales were down. But we're going through a bad time, aren't we? You know, generally, every day you turn the news on now, it's one thing or another. If people have only so much disposable income, unfortunately, this is one of the things they might say, well, you know what, we'll just perhaps give it a miss this year and we'll go next year. It's been a real hard job getting it over the line with the ticket sales, you know. And to be honest, we'd be lucky to break even tonight, depending on how the auction's gone, obviously. But we certainly won't make any money on the dinner itself. We need to get back in that vein of pulling the money in. Thankfully, we had some reserves, which we've more or less used now, because we've continued seeing how many of them were there. And that's for the last 2 years now, where we continue to send them and support them. But that can't go on forever. You know, it will be reflected in how many we can fund or how much we can pay them in the end, because we can't pay what isn't there. So hopefully, we're at the end of this bad period now, and tonight's the start of things picking up again.
Well, Keith Lambert there, characteristically telling it like it is. The Rayner Foundation, like so many organisations, is feeling the pinch at the moment, but nobody there is panicking, and they hope for better times ahead. Phil, as the leader of a major business, you'll keep a closer eye on prevailing economic conditions than most. What's your prognosis for the foundation and, you know, how the economic conditions might affect their ability to continue sending young riders abroad?
They need all the help that we can give them, I think, in reality. They're in a good place. They've got reserves and all that sort of stuff. But like all of these sort of foundations, it costs money to send these riders abroad, and it's their best possible chance of success in reality. So nights like the annual dinner and then the auction items on the annual dinner are really meaningful, but they do other things, like they do a large organized sportive. And, you know, if you want to do anything, you know, yourself that might raise funds for the foundation, the one thing I can guarantee you is that it's unlike many charities where your donations are lost in overheads. So it could be that, you know, 50 pence in the pound goes towards hidden overheads. You give to the Rainier Foundation, then the money actually goes to the riders. And I can remember when James and I handed over our fundraising check, if you're looking at, on average, you know, a grant of £500, that was a good cohort of riders that we knew were going to get a funding as a result of the things that we did. And, you know, one of the people who we've seen at the end of this year could already be one of those superstars that money helped in the past. So if you are passionate in trying to help to solve this issue of how do we give opportunity to talented cyclists, road cyclists who want to try and make it in the World Tour, then for me, the Rainer Foundation is one way where you can sort of directly help by fundraising directly for them, and they will be so appreciative of everything that you do. So, you know, for me, get to the dinner in 2023, folks, without a doubt. And then also, if you can help them by fundraising, then do it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, their success rate is ridiculous. I mean, I made the point to Keith that if the Rainer Foundation was a team, never mind a charity, there wouldn't be many squads that could live with them. Now, one thing we must mention, a sad but in some ways celebratory aspect, and that, of course, was the passing of Brian Robinson, the foundation's lifetime president. Brian, of course, a giant of British cycle sport. I mean, what a loss, but at the same time, what a legacy.
It was genuinely very moving on the night. You could tell, certainly with the board of trustees, just how impacted they'd been by Brian's passing. And when you looked at the video that ran on the night of what he did and when, and what makes it so incredible is, you know, he achieved some things at the times that he achieved them that nobody had achieved before. And he did it through just a determination to do it. It wasn't well funded and didn't have all the glitz of trucks and motorcades and mattresses being taken from room to room and massages, all this. You know, he did it at a time where literally it was him and his bike, very poor resources, when it was mano a mano, ride your bike. And to win a stage of the Tour de France when he did, to be the first rider, British rider ever to finish the Tour de France, to win the Critérium du Dauphiné, I think he set up where British cycling ultimately could become. Fantastic individual. I think even to well into his late 80s, still riding a bike, still passionate about the foundation, still passionate about the sport. He'd been an ambassador for things like the Tour de Yorkshire. He was really, you know, the darling of Yorkshire when it came to road cycling. But I think for anyone that knows anything about cycling and UK cycling, you can't really talk about history without mentioning his name. And I think all credit for the foundation for really pulling together the most magnificent tribute on the night. And you could hear a pin drop in the room when that was played. It was wonderful.
Yeah, they did a brilliant job. And also in celebrating Keith Lambert, I mean, there are some very credible people involved in this foundation. And as a result, perhaps, you know, it's not so surprising that they enjoy so much success. Listen out, everybody, because we've got some wonderful follow-up episodes coming. We interviewed Sam Watson, as we mentioned, the Rainer Foundation's Rider of the Year in 22. He represented Great Britain at the World Championships and at the Commonwealth Games. He's a local lad for the Rainer Foundation. He's from Leeds. And to top it off, what a nice guy. He has an incredibly bright future ahead with FDJ. We also got a one-to-one in the can with Harrison Wood, who's off to Cofidis, perhaps the most resilient rider of the foundation, even among this incredible class of 22. Harrison did a full 4 years overseas as an under-23 rider. He was involved in some horrific crashes even this year. And yet he's recovered, come back, and won a contract with a World Tour team. Can't wait to bring you Harrison's story. We also have an interview with Oliver Knight, who this year raced as a stagiaire for Tadej Pogacar's UAE Emirates team. I mean, the future really is bright. Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. And thank you very much indeed to everybody out there listening.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.